From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Tobacco is a legal product, and the age of 18 is adulthood. 18-year-olds serve in our military, 18-year-olds vote. The states around us do not require someone to be older to purchase tobacco products, and there is no reason that making it required to be 21 would somehow really significantly decrease smoking among 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds.
And the bill was so important to me that I decided to not take any chances. So I, for the first time ever with this governor, I called him. I talked to him, and I explained what the bill did. I told him that tobacco lobbyists don't like me, and I'm very proud of that. But I told him that the real effect of this bill is to stop an 18-year-old from buying cigarettes so that he or she could give it to the 14, 15, and 16-year-olds. And that's why the tobacco lobbyists are so much against the bill.
Pritzker now wants to raise the current rates against all Illinoisans until he can change the Constitution so he can ram through what he has called the graduated tax system for more Democrat spending, which is the root evil and the root problem of all issues that we have in Springfield.
Well, the governor dealt with several pieces of legislation this past week, including one that would have raised the smoking age. He rejected that and some others. We'll be talking about those. And also, Republicans continue to say Democrat J.B. Pritzker not giving enough details on his plans for taxes. We'll talk about all of that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio's State House Editor. And joining us today from member station WBEZ, Tony Arnold, who covers state government and politics. And Tony, it's good to have you on once again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tony, I'm going to start with you. The governor, one of the bills, we mentioned tobacco, but another one that got some attention, and you've certainly been watching this closely, dealt with the Quincy Veterans Home. Explain what this bill was and what did Rauner do with it?
This particular bill applies to the families who are suing the state of Illinois over neglect allegations over the deaths of their loved ones who passed away as a result of the Legionnaires outbreaks at the Veterans Home. And there are currently now a dozen of these lawsuits that have been filed against the state. The thing with these lawsuits is when somebody sues the state, whether it's slipping and falling on the University of Illinois campus or in this case, the death of somebody staying at a state-run veterans home, you go to the Court of Claims, which is kind of this obscure court, if you will. It's not like suing, going to the county or the federal government. It's its own system when you sue the state of Illinois. And that sets up its own rules. And one of those rules is the families, there's a limit in what somebody can get in terms of money, financial damages, of $100,000. This is actually an amount that's the lowest in the country in Illinois. And so after my colleague Dave McKinney and I reported this fact, lawmakers passed this bill that would raise the amount from $100,000 to $2 million. And it would apply not just to these families who are currently suing the state, whose cases are pending, the Rauner administration is actually fighting, saying there was no neglect in these deaths of Legionnaires, that actually then prompted this whole discussion about, well, what is an appropriate amount of money? And Governor Rauner this week, actually it was at the end of last week, that he's crossed out $2 million in the bill and wrote in his own amount of $300,000. And in his veto message and talking to reporters this week, Rauner didn't talk at all about whether his decision was related to specifically the families who are a part of these lawsuits, who are included in here, by the way, retroactively. It actually goes back in time specifically to include these families in the bill. Rauner said actually it's his motive was that he thought $2 million was too high in these other, you know, lawsuits that would come up against the state, not for the families. So but when I asked him, you know, how much of that was that a factor, Rauner ignored that part of the question and just said, well, I'm doing this because if you look around the country, $2 million is high, and it's high for lawsuits against the state, and you know that would come against other lawsuits, not specifically these deaths.
Well,
in fact, I would just add, though, that some other states do have no caps at all. So $2 million isn't as, you know, potentially as high as some other states that have no caps at all.
And do we know where the $2 million figure came from? Was that just something that, you know, lawmakers, whoever the sponsor was, you know, decided that was a good figure? Do we know where that came from?
It came from looking at other states, I believe, okay. and seeing at the upper end of how other states do it.
Now, the 100,000 we talked about, now we see the Court of Claims come up in a lot. Sometimes somebody slips and falls somewhere. They could, you know, go to the Court of Claims, get some damages. But we also see it a lot of times with people who have been wrongfully imprisoned, wrongfully incarcerated, and they have to go to the Court of Claims. Is that 100,000 the cap for them too? I thought that was a little higher. Maybe I'm
wrong.
No,
that's a different amount, Sean, based
okay,
on
that's
how
what I thought.
Long they've been incarcerated. Although even that, by the measure of some other states, is low. I mean, if you, after a certain number of years, and this is, I'm going off the top of my head, I think it's 14 years, you get a little more than $200,000, and that's it. If you spend 30 years, mm-hmm. however much time you spend behind bars, you're capped at $200,000 and chain. And
that's set
amount.
Specifically by law.
That's right.
Whereas the issue dealing with the veterans' home is that there's nothing in the law that says how much should be paid for that kind of a damage claim. And it's the Court of Claims, in a sense, it's a misnomer. The state really can't be sued because it's a sovereign entity. But it has set up this system to allow people who have valid claims against the state to be made whole. Typically, every spring, they pass a Court of Claims appropriation bill. You don't write about it because it's all really kind of cut and dried. Sometimes you go through and there's interesting stuff in there. It could be that there was a prison lockdown and somebody stole my stereo, and a prisoner will want to be reimbursed for that. Sometimes I was out driving and the DOT snowplow sideswiped my car, and I want to have that restored. Another thing that happens frequently is, because of the state's bill backlog, some bills aren't paid within the proper amount of time. We've talked before about how we have to pay interest, but sometimes the holder of that bill has to go to the Court of Claims to be paid. And the Court of Claims, it's not elected. It's appointed by the governor, and their role is to go through these myriad claims. And I mentioned the bill every year, and it probably has thousands upon thousands of entries in it for claims that the Court of Claims has found to be valid and is awarding this amount of money to the aggrieved party. And here the cap of $100,000, no matter what, is what lawmakers, by pretty wide margins, as I recall, thought was inadequate in the case of the Quincy families, and so they raised it to the $2 million.
And I guess that's the question lawmakers will have to decide as they're debating whether to override the governor on this or accept his mandatory veto or come up with some other amount that is perhaps between the original $100,000, the $2 million they had changed it to, and the governor suggested a change of, I believe, $300,000.
Yeah, he penciled out, as Tony said, the $2 million and wrote in $300,000.
Right. And so, you know, that's the question. If you sue a company, there's really no sorts of caps in Illinois, at least, on these sorts of damages, although there have been people who have tried in the past, and the state has tried to impose caps on particularly non-economic damages in cases like this. But even in terms of economic damages, right, where you can actually say your medical bills are X amount of dollars, there's no cap. But unless you are trying to recover from the state, where the cap is $100,000.
And again, it's because the state technically cannot be sued
right.
for a tort for some personal injury the same way a private citizen or a company can be in the normal courts. And as a matter of fact, three times the legislature has tried to limit so-called pain and suffering damage awards, the non-economic loss, and three times the Illinois Supreme Court has said, nope, can't do that.
Just so that it's clear that the families who are, the Quincy families who are suing the state have all said that money was not the motivating factor for their lawsuits. It was they wanted recognition from the state or the Rauner administration that there was neglect, that they did not handle the outbreaks of Legionnaires correctly. And secondly, that the lawmakers who sponsored this bill to raise the limits have all vowed to override the governor's veto here. And politically speaking, that you know, there's a trick box a little bit here playing out where it's if you sign the bill, it kind of admits, well, maybe there was some neglect going on there. These families are onto something with their lawsuits. Vetoing it in this way is a further indication that Rauner really wants to fight these lawsuits.
Well, the governor got some other criticism this week when he vetoed what has been called the Tobacco 21 legislation, and that would have raised the smoking age in the state of Illinois. And Brian, this was something that they've tried in the past. They've talked about it a lot in the past. It finally got through the legislature, getting to the governor's desk. What did the governor do with this? What did he say about it?
The governor basically said two arguments in response to why he decided to veto this legislation, which, as you said, would have raised the purchasing age for tobacco products from 18 to 21. He made both an economic argument we often hear about restrictions like this, which is that people can just go over the border. If you live in the Chicago area, you can go to Indiana or Wisconsin. If you live in Metro East or along any of the other borders, you can just go to Missouri, Iowa, Indiana, and make these purchases. So he says, it would hurt Illinois businesses, convenience stores, that sort of thing, without actually changing people's behavior. The other argument he made was a sort of libertarian freedom argument, where he says, if people are 18, we ask them to go fight and potentially get wounded or die in the military. If we ask that, then they ought to, that's considered the age of adulthood for that. It should be the age of adulthood to purchase what is, a legal product after all. I think it's worth noting the governor himself is, I believe, a avid cigar smoker. We've seen reporting about that. I've never personally witnessed it, but I've heard other people who've seen him smoking cigars. That could have been something that he just, it does fit in with his sort of libertarian worldview. Senate President Cullerton, who we heard from at the top of the show there, has been a longtime anti-smoking advocate. He is the one who helped pass the indoor smoking ban here in Illinois. And he said he, for the first time since Governor Rauner took office, he made a personal appeal. I'm not sure, given all the terrible strife we've had in Illinois government, why there wasn't more of this personal reaching out. But anyways, this is what he said. He chose to make his, first call to the governor to lobby for a specific piece of legislation, but it didn't work.
And Charlie, does the governor have a point about people going over the border and just being able to buy it? Certainly if you live right close to the border, and we have seen that. We've seen that in different parts of the state where you see cigarette advertisements, cheaper tax rates on cigarettes. So you can buy your cigarettes cheaper if you just cross a bridge over a river or something. But does he have a point on this one, that this would be economically damaging and that's a reason not to sign it?
Well, I suppose in a sense that would be accurate, because if you live close enough, like here in Springfield, I'm not sure anybody would want to drive all the way down to St. Louis to buy a pack of cigarettes. But if you lived in Belleville or East St. Louis, you might drive across the bridge to do it. And there would be a revenue loss. I think, I don't remember the exact figure, but it was in the tens of millions of dollars of lost revenue in tobacco taxes by people buying out of state. But I think I would look at it from the other side, and I agree with Cullerton. The health impact is such that anything you can do to discourage young people from doing it, I mean, I'm old enough that I grew up in an era when smoking was common. You'd see advertisements where there would be actors dressed up in white clothes like a doctor saying, "Are you nervous? Have a Camel." And in my group of friends, some of us started smoking in grade school. I quit. I never liked it. But other people are still doing it today. And so that argument of the economic loss, I'm not sure that that, in my mind, I don't think that outweighs the cost in health. Mm-hmm. And you look at the libertarian argument, you could apply that same rationale. Well, you're old enough to vote. You're old enough to serve in the military. Why can't you buy a beer?
Yeah. Well, Charlie mentioned the cigarettes, and that's, I still think, what I think of in this. We're talking tobacco 21, but something that is becoming much more popular among young people is the vaping. And this bill would have also addressed that, Brian?
Yeah, I think it was all tobacco products, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. Is that correct, Brian?
Yeah, and snuff and things like that. Okay. I mean, or dip. I mean, there's a lot of different products. You're right, but that is a growth area. And one of the things Cullerton points out, Sean, is that his view is that this is not necessarily targeted primarily at getting 19 and 20 year olds to stop smoking. But what he says is, if you prevent them from buying, they also can't pass it on to the 14, 15, 16 year olds, the people. And that is, as you said, that's really this vaping and things like that is growing in popularity. The tobacco companies are targeting younger people because that's part of their business model, right? You get young people started and then you sort of hook them early on and you've got a customer with a built-in addiction for a long time to come.
And Tony, something else the governor acted on in the past week, we mentioned this Court of Claims legislation, tobacco legislation, but one that might be getting even more attention in the Chicago area was he acted on some immigration legislation.
Yeah, the governor vetoed three immigration-related bills. One in particular, he said, would basically make it incumbent on law enforcement to address or help out somebody's with their visas, and that's his justification that he said was his justification for vetoing it, that particular one at least. And you know, I think what's part of what's going on here is you have Rauner last year signing what was called the Trust Act, and that one is one that he took a lot of heat on over the contested Republican primary from his conservative, you know, to the state representative Jeannie Ives, who ran to his right. It was included in one of her most controversial TV ads, and so Rauner took a lot of heat over this, and he's been having to kind of reiterate, well, I signed that bill at the request of law enforcement, even though people like Ives and the more conservative members of the General Assembly have been saying, well, it's a sanctuary bill. And so this is something that Rauner's been kind of addressing in many different ways, and you know, it's just been an interesting you know, issue to see Rauner talk about over the span of his time as governor, from, you know, whether Syrian refugees should be allowed to come to Illinois. Rauner didn't think so when that was an issue, you know, more in the news, at least maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, to signing the Trust Act, to now vetoing some of these bills and you know, getting heat now from J.B. Pritzker, who is mocking Rauner, saying that he would have signed those bills.
The governor also this week vetoing the teacher minimum wage legislation, would have raised a minimum wage for teachers in the state to $40,000. I believe over half of the teachers, or this school districts rather, in the state, start many of their teachers out below that amount. Governor vetoing that, the sponsor telling one of our reporters that he does plan to try to override that later this year. Let me move on, though. Brian, the Republicans this week holding some road shows, basically saying there's lack of details coming out of J.B. Pritzker, who keeps talking about the progressive income tax.
Yeah, this is something that the reporters have been pressing Mr. Pritzker on for some time to try and get him to reveal what he thinks a graduated or progressive income tax in Illinois should look like. This, in case people are not familiar, this is where the more money you make, the more taxes you pay on higher income levels. So for the first, you know, and where you set those levels is something that is subject to debate in state law, just as it is in the federal level. So it could be that, say, for the first $50,000, everybody would pay 1 or 2%. Then for the next $50,000, if somebody makes that much more, they pay a higher rate on that. And then for the next 100,000, million, whatever it is, you can pay a little bit higher rate on the additional amounts of money. And Pritzker says he generally favors this idea. In fact, pretty much all the major Democratic primary candidates this year favored this idea. But he has never been willing to say what that system could look like. And there are ways you can structure it where people could actually end up with lower tax, or the vast majority of Illinoisans could theoretically end up with lower tax rates than they have now, or they could be higher. And in the absence of Mr. Pritzker coming out with any details on that, the Republicans have been sort of painting on this blank canvas their worst fears. They did seize on a bill that went nowhere, that listed some rather high rates. And as I said, this bill had no real take up in the General Assembly, but they've kind of based their advertising on that to try and convince voters that this is a terrible idea and you should elect Republicans in Illinois instead of Democrats because they just want to raise your taxes.
And Charlie, is Pritzker being pragmatic here, saying that, you know, I'm going to work this out later, or is this just politicals to try to avoid the criticism that might come from, you know, setting some type of rate?
Well, I think he's trying to avoid the criticism by providing specifics, but the downside is then it frees the governor and his Republican allies in the legislature to suggest that, well, everybody's going to have to pay more. So I guess he's darned if he does and darned if he doesn't. And we focus on rates, but that's not the whole story. All of our neighboring states, but Indiana, for a long time, have had graduated taxes. Now, Kentucky, this past spring, decided to go to a flat rate. But a couple of months ago, for a piece in Illinois Issues, the online magazine that's associated with NPR Illinois, I looked at all the states around us, and I calculated what would the tax be for someone with the median household income, a couple with two kids. What would their actual tax be in all the different states? And one of the things that was interesting is that, for example, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but in Missouri, the graduation, the lowest amount, what's the best way to say this? The level at which you have to pay a higher rate is something like $9,000, $10,000. But Missouri also, and their rates are higher than what Illinois' are, but Missouri also grants exemptions. And when you calculate in the exemptions, someone under Missouri's structure with the median income of Illinois would pay less than what someone in Illinois pays. So I guess the point is you can't just talk about rates. You have to talk about what kind of exemptions, what kind of a personal exemption, what kind of a tax credit are you going to allow in order to be able to get a clear picture of exactly what this would mean for an individual. And as I say, I think Pritzker doesn't want to provide those details because he doesn't want the Republicans to jump all over him. But by not doing so, he gives them an opportunity to say whatever they want and portray whatever dire consequences they can imagine that might occur were he to be elected. And I think it's also worth noting, even were J.B. Pritzker elected, the state could not enact a graduated income tax until 2021 because we need a constitutional amendment to remove the section in the revenue article of the Constitution that says income taxes have to be a flat rate.
And that said, though, Charlie, Pritzker has talked about potentially changing the current, working within the current tax structure, perhaps through rebates or additional deductions to make it more progressive, kind of using existing statutory or using permissible laws to sort of add some progressivity to the tax system without actually having an actual progressive tax.
And what do you suppose might happen were the legislature to put together a package of exemptions that would have the same impact as the graduated rate? Don't you think there would be lawsuits challenging that? Yeah, and it would go to the Supreme Court, who would finally decide 2 years down the road whether or not that was legit?
Could be. Could be.
Tony, does that seem to be, I know there's a lot of advertising on this, does that seem to be sticking right now as criticism for Pritzker? Is that playing well from what you're seeing?
I'm seeing TV ads. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing TV ads about this very issue over and over and over again. I think that's how, probably how a lot of people are getting this information. And in fact, when Rauner released an ad criticizing Pritzker over this very issue and saying, you know, he's not clear and your taxes are likely to go up. Prisker responded with his own ad, and he's able to, you know, he has so much money that he's able to, for every ad that Rauner has, Prisker's able to counter it with his own ad saying, oh, shucks, you know, this ad over there is criticizing me, and I'm just here to tell you that all I want to do here is raise taxes on rich people. And that's the 30-second, you know, version that you're getting from Pritzker when you watch the Cubs game or the Cardinals game, as you may mm-hmm. see. But so I think that's maybe how this is being consumed. I think the other thing that my takeaway from this week was at the Republican legislature press conference, they kind of swore, you know, promised that the Republican Party is pretty divided in Illinois, and we had this brutal primary fight, but on this particular issue, we're all unified on this one, and we can actually come together. And yeah, it's supposed to be this, you know, you're hearing all these things about this is going to be a Democratic year, and Democrats are going to win up and down the ballot, but on this issue, actually, if we're strong enough on saying Democrats want to raise your taxes, and not just Democrats, but J.B. Pritzker, it can actually, you know, play out in some downstate races. And that gets into, you know, if Pritzker's saying, I'm going to have to negotiate this, and I don't know what those rates are going to be, you know, well, then that it matters what the makeup of the General Assembly is going to look like for the next 2 years or beyond. And that gets into, you know, what happens this fall, and what these, you know, if Pritzker wins, who's there to actually negotiate with?
Well, the one thing we know for sure is that the Illinois Senate will be controlled by Democrats for the next 2 years. And the reason I can say that with such conviction is because if every Republican running for the Illinois Senate on the November ballot were to win, they still wouldn't have a majority.
It's time now for our notes from the field. Brian, let me start with you.
Interesting report in the Chicago Tribune this week. They got an advance copy of a book by a man named Bradley Tusk, who was a top aide for former Governor Rod Blagojevich. And I feel like we've heard everything we possibly could about the Blagojevich administration, but this did have a couple of new revelations, really just driving home the fact that Blagojevich was a great politician but had almost zero interest in running the government. Talked about his daily routine being a couple of phone calls, preparing for a run, going for a run, coming back and stretching after the run, and then taking a 90-minute shower after his run. But didn't really like running the government, apparently.
And Charlie?
Well, there was legislation signed by the governor that is intended to deal with the opioid crisis. And in essence, what it would say is someone who is prescribed one of these opioid drugs for pain can receive a medical marijuana card and instead opt for medical marijuana to relieve the pain. And the sponsor, Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park, posted what I thought was interesting graphic. It showed the number of people who died by opioid overdoses, and it was in the tens of thousands. Number of people who died of cannabis overdoses, zero.
That will do it for this week. We'll leave it there. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Tony Arnold from WBEZ. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org, and production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.